to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So we had an opportunity to speak with Professor Leonard Pitts, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, about his latest piece called What's to Follow an Insurrection. Last week, domestic terrorist insurgents attempted to overthrow the government. Now that sounds ridiculous. That sounds like a movie, right? Something out of, 1776, an outline of a dystopian time in this country. But no, it happened. Now, you and I both know that they were not going to overthrow American democracy. Like, it doesn't work like that. I would argue, even though Du Bois said that American democracy, you don't really know what it is until it's been tried. I don't think even a million insurgents can overthrow democracy, because I don't think democracy is something that you can see, because we don't have democracy in this country. I think democracy is an ideal. I think democracy is a goal. I think democracy, this experiment, is something that we're working out, which is unusual. I mean, you got to think about the history of this country. We have been trying to do something that no model actually exists for. We said we didn't want a king or queen, and I absolutely don't want kings or queens in this country. I really don't. I mean, I am someone who stands against the notion of kings and queens and princes and ladies. I don't want any of that. So we shot for democracy. We said we're going to elect a president. And George Washington chose not to be a king, chose to step down to continue the election process. He was no saint. I'm just saying he could have been a king. We found with Roosevelt that we had to enact an amendment so that presidents, you get two terms and you got to go if you get reelected that second time. So we're trying to do something that there's really no model for. We need a complete overhaul of this system, which should include enacting term limits on all forms of government. Yeah, I know I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. There should be term limits on all of them. People should not be able to sit as a senator or as a member of the House of Representatives until we take the keys from their cold, dead hands. You should not be able to sit on Supreme Court until you die in office. You should not be able to remain in the running to be a council person in Baltimore City for as long as you feel like it. No. Term limits. Get them in, get them out. That's what democracy looks like. You serve your time and then somebody else's time to go. There is a sense that there's going to be a lot of unrest starting on January 16th. That's going to continue. The security ramped up after the FBI bulletin says they're doing armed protests. That's the plan, for armed protests to storm government offices in every single state on Inauguration Day, regardless of whether the state certified electoral votes for Biden or Trump. They have ramped up the National Guard, called in 15,000 members of the National Guard, and extremists have moved to secret online channels to prepare for Inauguration Day. They're checking to make sure that anyone who's supposed to work at the inauguration, they don't have sympathies so they can try to, hold off a military coup. No, y'all, we're talking about America here. That's why I said, let's not talk about being great. Let's just try to get to mediocre at this point. Like, we're just trying to hang on and get the next president installed. What's been at the heart of who we are has always been a peaceful transfer of power. That's gone. We can never say that we are known for having a peaceful transfer of power again because of the threat level at this point leading into next week's festivities. I want to hear from you. 410-319-8888. Where do we go from here? Your feelings on what is taking place? What's to follow an insurrection? What should the black and brown community be doing? What should the white community be doing right now? We have Clarence on the phone from Baltimore. Clarence, how are you?
Hey, thanks for that. Thanks for taking the call, Dr. K. But, I was kind of laughing because I've already got my popcorn and my cable bill. But Dr. K, seriously, Dr. Pitts, Professor Pitts, he mentioned two things that, you know, I want to go into. He said for the last 25 years, the white church has been solid on certain issues. No, that has been since the inception of the country. Dr. K, as someone once put it, just recently I heard, that there's a parasitic relationship between white supremacy and the white church. Mm. They both exist hand in hand. Now, Dr. K, you know, people get tired of hearing me say certain things like this. But Dr. K, you cannot know your enemy and what you must fight against unless you understand what your enemy believes. Okay? Deeply rooted in the white church is racism and what they believe about us. That's separate from the black church. And in my view, the black church has almost become subservient and abetting the white church in white supremacy because it always remains silent along those religious lines. Dr. K, the black church cannot continue to be silent on these issues, knowing full well that what these people believe in is something totally different than what not mine, because, well, I was raised a Christian, you know, but what I was taught, it's totally different. There's no hatred towards white folks in me, or do I believe that they're an inferior race and should be subservient to me. Okay, let's just leave it right there on those lines, Dr. K, and you can figure out where I was going. And the other thing is, those gated communities that you were speaking of, I think Chris Hedrick and Noam Chomsky said that white folks retreat into these communities that they refer to as Richistan. But that's all I wanted to say. And thanks for taking
the
call.
I'm so glad you said that. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Folks, I pulled up an article here because Clarence reminded me of something I read back in October. I'm a big fan of The Atlantic. I try to get through articles that pop out to me. Ibram Kendi keeps a piece going in there. But it came out October 2020, and it says, "The Church's Black Exodus." Listen to this. I think it's going to help us frame this conversation and may get you going. Because they were talking in this article specifically about why black people were leaving white churches because of the church's silence on racism and COVID-19. That this notion that you can go to church and not talk about what is happening right now in the streets. It's what Andre Johnson called the white church silence. White church quiet. It was a hashtag. Why weren't white churches speaking up about Black Lives Matter? Now, we don't talk a lot about religion in terms of critiquing religion on this show. We know that, right? I think I'm clear now. I try to, you know, I'm walking the line here. But if you are attending a church, whether you're doing online service because of COVID-19, or you're bearing the wind and going in because, you know, your church has got it figured out, what do you do if your pastor chooses not to talk about the issue that's happening right now? As a black person, do you leave that church? As a Christian, are we saying that we are not supposed to be engaged and involved with what is happening now, the struggle that's happening now? Are we only supposed to look in the by and by? Or are we supposed to deal with the struggle that's happening in the here and now? That is something that we have to think about. If you call yourself, you believe in anything other than you, what is your Bible? I don't know, your pamphlet, I don't know, your tweet, whatever you're following, whoever you're following, what should you be doing in this moment? Because I think it is incumbent upon every single American to be engaged in two battles right now. There are only two battles. I remember a movie I saw. I can't remember the name of the movie. But talking about, I want to be involved in the war. And the person said, look, the only war that's happening now is the one we're dealing with. This is the only war that's happening now. So whatever else you want to deal with, it doesn't matter. We're all talking about this war here. Right now, I think every single American, no matter your race, your ethnicity, or your gender, you should be involved in two battles right now. That's it. This racial battle that's been brewing. As Professor Pitts said, we've kicked the can down the road and we have run out of road. And COVID-19, that's it. There's nothing else. Because the racial battle, really, is the reason for all these other things happening. Why are more blacks dying of COVID-19? It's the racial piece. Why can't we send our children back to school in Baltimore City Public? It's the racial piece. Why are black folks having the struggle and we have to be home because there might be some violence? It's the racial piece, which has been used to mask and cover the economic piece. See, this is why I get so angry about the folks down in Congress, a bunch of millionaires sitting around debating about giving us $600. Maybe if we did what Dr. King said, look past the racial issue, we realize that black and white folks, Hispanic folks, and indigenous folks, hey, when we're poor, we're poor. We have more in common than we have in contention. Just want to throw that out there. Let's get the conversation going. Let's go, Mark from Pikesville. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling and holding.
Yeah. Listen, I just want to say, you know, listening to you and Dr. Pitts, you know, there is no looking past the racial piece for white people to unite with black people, even if they have the same ideology, because when this thing turns violent, white people don't turn violent against white people. And you saw that, in very stark contrast at the Capitol building, you know, all those armed people running into that building and all the armed people that, you know, were supposed to protect that building. I mean, there were three branches of law enforcement in that building. The Secret Service protecting all of the people who, run the law in this country. And there was the Secret Service was there, the Capitol Police was there, the D.C. Police was there, the FBI was there, and nobody drew their weapon and fired.
Right.
Except in the one case where the young lady was shot jumping through the door, and she was again trained American military Air Force, you know, and. And you saw white folks of every economic stripe, poor, middle class, upper class, you know, career military, corporate, you know, people coming to a protest with their work name tags on and everything. People working in technology all the way down to the garbage man and what have you. They don't, we have to stop pushing this narrative to black folks that we're going to find some alliance and allegiance, and we need to start telling black folks about physically protecting black folks. Like literally, along with when we talk about the churches and what message they're not pushing around COVID and everything, where are people standing up and saying, you know, these are your children, these are your houses, these are your neighborhoods. You will have to be prepared to defend them, or what you're going to see since 2008, look at the number of hate crimes since Obama had become president, and they escalated every year. The number of militias and the people who join militias, the numbers went up every year. This isn't something, what happened last week isn't something that just happened. It's been growing and growing and growing for decades now. These people feel disenfranchised, and they feel like anything that they don't have, it's because black and brown people have it. And I'm sorry, you just simply cannot try to pick out, you know, it's like trying to pick out the raisins in a cookie or something and say, well, this person is for me and this person. Well, if it gets into a life or death situation, that person isn't going to draw a weapon for you. So right now we need to do like all the other groups and really look at each other for our security, and we need to be armed. We don't need to go and defend anybody's Capitol building or anything. That's nonsense. But we need to be prepared to defend our homes, defend our families, defend our children, and we need to stop thinking that we're going to find the good white folks. Not that all white folks are bad. That's not the point. But I don't have the time an inclination to start picking people out in a dangerous situation, especially when, and go back and read in the Washington Post, New York Times, for years they've been publishing articles saying every branch of law enforcement is infiltrated by militia members and white
supremacists. Yes, I've heard that.
This has been front page news for years and years and years before Obama was president. Do you remember when the bikers
had
that shootout in Texas?
Yes.
And nine people died, and the cops just rolled up and asked everybody to just sit down and be calm while they sorted it out. Hundreds of people shooting at and shooting each other, but they were all white, and nobody went to jail for those bodies.
No, oh, you're so absolutely right.
This thing is not new, and these people, all through Obama's presidency, all Trump did was jump on the wave. The wave existed long before he came into politics. He jumped on the wave, and he made those crazy his constituency. But they were there, and they were getting prepared, and they were arming up. And if you look at gun sales over the last 20 years, we have more guns in America than we have people.
Yes,
and
we do.
And when I go to the gun range, it's 50-50 right now. It's tons of black folks. It's tons of white folks. They don't have anything in common. They don't talk to each other while they're at the gun range, unless the person is working there and they're talking to a black person. And everybody is in there, you know.
Putting the work in. I got to stop you there. Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate you, folks. Right? You remember me telling you that the number one purchasers of weapons during the latter half of COVID-19 was the black community. Now, this is interesting to me because I think a lot of people know where I stand on guns, or you know what? Let's be clear, where I stood on guns, because I was like, no. You know, come on, you know, give peace a chance. Let's just try to work this out. Y'all, we're at a point now that we have to have a real conversation about protecting ourselves and protecting our families. I know that that is a conversation that people don't want me to have. Somebody who has a master's in peace studies, has an institute in race, peace, and social justice. I'm just saying, right now, we have more guns than we have people. If it's talking about armed protest in all 50 states, at all capitals, I don't think they're coming to Baltimore. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm not sure if we're going to see MAGA hat marchers up and down North Avenue. Like, let's be clear. I don't think there's going to be a lot of MAGA folks over, you know, in Freddie Gray's neighborhood. I don't think so. I don't think they're going to be marching over there on Pennsylvania Avenue talk about, you know what, stop the steal. I don't think so, but it will bleed over and spill. Cookie's on the phone from Dundalk. Cookie, what do you think? How are you? Cookie, are you with us on line two? Hey, Cookie, how you doing?
Oh, fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I appreciated what the young man said this before me, but I heard anyway, turned my radio off. But I want to say, of course, we can't paint everybody with a brush. And one of the things was that we thought was encouraging was when Black Lives Matter rallies were taking place all over the country, that we saw a lot of diversity. We saw our white sisters and brothers and other people from other races stand and protest too.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave a sense of hope. But I will say that I am multiracial or biracial. And so I predominantly grew up in a black church. And I was accustomed to hearing things that address what was happening in society. And I left the black church momentarily because of the particular church I was going to. I had questions about things that were happening there. So I went to a church that was led by a white pastor married to an Asian woman, and the demographics was predominantly, I'd say it was Native Americans, white, and a couple of other races, perhaps, but maybe like five black people in the church. And what caused me to leave the church, I loved their outreach to their members, to them reaching out if you were absent or you were
sick. Right.
I loved that, right? I loved what they did for the children, et cetera. But what upset me was two comments. One, when he held up his grandchild his daughter was clearly Asian, but the grandchild had blonde hair and blue eyes, and he held her up and said, isn't she beautiful? Like, isn't she perfect? And I said something kind of under my breath, like, how dare he say that? What's he trying to say? What about these brown, curly-haired children in this church? I was mad, and my husband said, I knew you were going to get upset. So, but I was kind of like, at that time, visiting, and I said something to a couple of his members about it who are Native American and mixed with other things. And so they were, like, defending him, like, oh, he sometimes he says things and he doesn't, blah, blah, blah. So later, when Kevin Kaepernick was taking the knee, he said, well, like, I'm not in. I know you guys want to go to a football game, but I know I don't really care about a football game right now. And he's kind of alluding to that fact. And I was hot because I saw two young black males who routinely go there, and they must be in there. Late teens or something, and maybe 20, 19, 18 years old. And I felt like, you know what? That's such a sharp contrast. You can, even though we're Christians and we're not of the world, but we live in the world.
Right, we do.
And what
we
I was accustomed to is that black people usually talk about what is going on in the environment. So when the Freddie Gray, for example, when the Freddie Gray thing happened, the pastor of the church where I was attending, he was saying, I shouldn't see, I better not see any of my members rioting as far as...
Oh, he said this from the pulpit.
TV, right? TV. And what I drew from that was that I think that before there was an NAACP, the black church was one place where black people were allowed to gather and discuss social issues.
I got to stop you there, Cookie. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Sekou from Baltimore, how are you?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for holding.
Hey, listen. As a 71-year-old elder, I would be remiss if I didn't share basic historical facts with the listening audience.
Okay.
We are the only forced immigrants in this country. Our African ancestors were not brought here to be given freedom, justice, and self-determination. They were not brought here to be given democracy or Christianity, neither of which white folks were able to practice, because you can't practice democracy, Christianity, and be a slave trader. What you saw in D.C., those were the overt racists. Those who stood back and stood by, they were the covert racists. But a racist is still a racist. And as far as that, black and white uniting, coming together, when and where has that ever happened? Karl Marx was writing about the white working class and the black working class uniting back in the 1800s when he invented the concept of communism.
Yes.
It's not going to happen. It's not realistic. We have to understand that we are 40 million strong or over in this country, 1.5 billion in the world. We don't have any friends in the race, according to the historian Dr. John Henry Clark, who has been right 99% of the time. He said we are Africans. We have no friends in the world, and we have to save ourselves. Stop looking for somebody else to save us, because they ain't going to save us. We have to save ourselves.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, folks. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I got Trooper, James, Kenny, Ron, Jessica, and there's one more line for you. Okay, let's jump right into the phone calls. Trooper from Baltimore, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, you know, I agree with you. You are right. There's two fights we're supposed to fight. One is the good fight of faith. If you're in another fight, you're in the wrong fight. But I agree with you where the pastors, is their obligation sometimes, you know, if you go to church, to keep the people informed. Let's stop that 1950 and 40 conversation like it ain't your fight, this mind you've been in. No. You need to know what your enemy is doing. You need to know what's going on in the world. You need to know how to regulate situations and problems and stuff like that. And sometimes, you know, people that go to church, it's up to the pastor sometimes to tell the truth. Because when people say, what you don't know won't hurt you, yeah, that's not true. What you don't know do hurt you. You know, like the word said, my people destroy for the lack of knowledge. When we don't know, it's certain times, you know, certain times people of color is behind the power curve. They right. don't seem to understand what's going on in the world. And therefore, they be hurt by a lot of things.
No, you're absolutely right. I appreciate you, Truthler. We have James on the phone. Yep, I appreciate you. We have James on the phone from Baltimore. Folks, I'm going to hold just let you know I'm holding tight to the two-minute rule because we want to make sure we get everybody in. James from Baltimore, how are you?
How are you, Dr. Ken?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
I can say Jesus was just us, mm-hmm. and his name was just us. If you know, been reading the Bible, like, because they've been preaching it. So I always say that we pray too much, we ask too much, and we beg too much. They're not mm-hmm. giving us nothing. Mm-hmm. We got to get it. And they're ready. We're not ready. Half of us don't even believe in arming ourselves. We don't know nothing about guerrilla warfare. They're prepared. These guys come there armed. And how it's going down, the way I see it now, it's a theory of mind and the theory of our emotions. And we're not taking hold to anything. Thank you very much, Dr. K.
All right. Thank you so much, James. Kenny from Baltimore County, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
You know what I think? I think that the government is going to have to ban those people once they get out of jail and get out of prison. The government should ban them from having licenses to go to gun ranges and ban them from having licenses to go hunting. And they should ban them from going into any state, local, and federal government buildings and stuff. They got to do something about them people.
So then thank you for putting that on the table, Kenny. It's about banning them. And I think a lot of them are being banned now just from flying, but they're talking about doing more than that. What do you do with them? Like, what exactly do you do? We have Ron on the phone from Gwin Oak. Ron, how are you?
Hello, Dr. K. Hi. I just wanted to share with you, I spoke to a friend of mine of 23 years on Sunday. He's a groundskeeper down at the U.S. Capitol
yes.
in the Supreme Court. He told me, these were his words, he said, one of those Capitol Hill policemen, everybody knows him because he beats up on the homeless over Union Station and everything else. They said he's a well-known racist, and he will kick butt around Capitol Hill because he tried to keep it kind of purified. But when he told me that on Sunday, he said, yeah, Chuck is a well-known racist Capitol Hill policeman. And he left the back door open. And the problem was laughing at them folks as they were being hurt and murdered around there, around the Capitol. Oh, so I just wanted to share that. When he told me that on Sunday, he said, we've known that for years, that Chuck was a racist around Capitol Hill. And he would beat those folks up over at Union Station,
that's
the homeless. And, you know, when we had the protests and everything else, he would kick your teeth in. So just wanted to share that. Thanks for letting me share.
Bye. I appreciate it because he's one of the ones that was suspended. Thank you so much. Jessica's on the phone from Baltimore. Jessica, how are you?
Dr. K, this thing just really hits home as far as religion is concerned. And I get so passionate when I hear our people discuss Christianity and how it has affected us in slavery. And my grandparents are avid Christians. They live by the Bible. That's all they know is the Bible. And so for me, I branched off away from that and found a new way of freedom. Mm. So, you know, I feel like our people don't really do enough research. Some of our people. I'm not going to put us all in the same basket.
Right, right.
That's not fair. So I'm going to say some. But when it comes to religion and Christianity, and I'm going to say this carefully because I don't want it to be taken out of context, but COVID happened for a reason, because before COVID happened, the churches were packed every Sunday. Tithes were being paid. We were eating of the blood of Christ and this, that, and the third. Sunday school was going on. But the point I wanted to make is that our neighborhoods were still impoverished. Our education system was still broken. The same complaints that we had before COVID when religion was popping are the same complaints we have now during COVID when religion is kind of scarce because you can't have people in those condensed environments. And the only question I want to pose is, what has religion done to help our communities? Yes, we can commune. Yes, we can get the Holy Ghost, but that is not helping us progress.
Okay, thank you so much. No, Jessica, I'm so glad you put that out there. Now, folks, I just want to be clear, as we are sharing our feelings, I know that passions and emotions are running high. I get that. But what do we do from here? What exactly do we do? How do we kind of move forward? There's a lot on the table now. What should the black and brown community do? What should the white community do? What should be happening in the church right now? Like, how are we responding to this threat, this attack, maybe to the breaking down, the dismantling of the veneer of democracy that we've been living under? I say veneer of democracy because we don't live in a democratic country. We like to say that we're a democracy. We hold up the banner of democracy. But as long as we have that electoral college, that's clear that it's not a democracy in action. Something that Leonard Pitts put into his column. Leonard Pitts says that as we go forth from an insurrection, that we need to abolish the Electoral College because the Electoral College came dangerously close, 73,700 votes across three states to giving Donald Trump a second term. His shellacking by 7 million votes overall notwithstanding. The Electoral College came close, dangerously close, to giving Donald Trump a second term. Leonard Pitts also points out that the Republican Party has not won the popular vote consistently since 1993 and only won it one time since 1993 in 2004, Bush v. Kerry. Since that, the Republican Party has been able to seize the presidency from the Electoral College and not from the popular vote. I just want to put that out there. 410-319-8888, that what we saw last week wasn't just about anger at Donald Trump not getting the presidency. Leonard Pitts is saying they're recognizing that the insurrection, the rampage that happened, was this fear and the understanding that ultimately that particular group is outnumbered. That is powerful, folks. Robert's on the phone from Maryland. Robert, how are you?
Okay. I'm thinking a couple things. And one, I think Leonard Pitts mentioned some of this. Unless we can unite people around some agenda of economic justice, we're going to be continuing to face with this kind of situation. And this, I mean, racism sort of reinforces, you know, the economic insecurity, which itself reinforces the racism, you know. So we're going to have to, that's going to have to happen. Now, as far as our organizing, I think black people are going to have to organize for our common interest, and it's going to be more and more a grassroots thing. As to a large extent, it was in other periods, right? We have to do that. As far as alliance with others, I mean, I'm not going to simply say we can't ally with anybody else. I heard people say often, we black people have no friends. Well, I think there'll be some people in white, brown, and other communities that we can organize with, and some we can't. So let's organize among ourselves. Let's organize with those with whom we can organize. What we saw this summer suggests that a multiracial resistance to racism is possible, but it also what we're also seeing is that this sort of reactionary right-wing backlash is still afoot also, and we could be, and I know you, as an historian you can probably appreciate this, we could be, as someone said, be facing America's Weimar moment. I've suggested before we had a fork in the road in which we're either going to go a path in which there's going to be a democratic, egalitarian reorganization society on cooperative lines, or we're heading toward a nightmare.
Yeah, I can see that.
So we may be at a fork in the road. The people who that mob we saw in Washington don't have to define the future. But if we don't, they will.
Yeah, I thank you so much for that. If we don't, they will. My husband also chimed in and said, look, it's not the church. You know, it's not the church. It's the voters who continue to put the thieves in charge of the storehouse. It's the voters. Now, y'all not going to like this part, because let's remember that the Electoral College, those are not volunteers. They are voted in, y'all. When you make your choices, you're sending up the Electoral College representatives whose names we do not know Just think about that. These are unknown people. Unless you go and dig, which we were trying to find out who's on the Electoral College. Unless you go dig, these are unknown people. Not even a tenth of the population. Not even 1% of the population. They have control over who becomes your president and mine. That is a lot of power for people that we can't know by name. I'm saying we, Electoral College, I'm thinking when it's time for the election, their pictures should be splattered everywhere. I want to know who ultimately put Donald Trump in office over Hillary Clinton. I want to know who ultimately put Bush in office over Gore. I want to know who has that power. 410-319-8888. We have Roro on the phone from Baltimore. Roro, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K. Good evening.
Good evening.
All right, so you were saying, what can we do? Now, what should we do? My thing is, first, let's start with us and just, agree on everything, on a lot of things together, us as people of color. We have a lot of issues with one another, and, therefore, we can't even get it right. Like you said, yesterday you were saying something about it was like 10 or 11 black people of color.
Yeah.
In that mob. So,
we counted. Now, there may have been some that weren't in the photographs. We were just looking at the photographs and video. That's all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, my thing is just getting it right with us as people of color. People of color and people of color get it together with one another first so that we can be able to fight this war, this spiritual, this warfare spiritually, and we be all in together with one another. That's the first thing. That's all I'm saying.
I appreciate that. Folks, we were talking about the Electoral College, just to follow up on what the caller said. So how many members do we have? I just want to let you know. 538 people determine who's going to be your president. I want you to just sit with that for a minute. 538 people out of a population of 327 million determine who your president's going to be. How do we get 538? Because, number one, for each member of the House of Representatives, there's one Electoral College member. So that's 435 members of the House of Representatives. So that's 435 members of the Electoral College. Additionally, because we have 100 senators, that's another 100 spots. That makes 535. D.C. gets 3 spots. So there are 538 members of the Electoral College. That changes every 10 years based upon the census. Because if the number of the members of the House of Representatives goes down, then the number of Electoral College members goes down. I want you to think about why that needs to be abolished. 538 people determine who's going to be the leader of the free world. 538. 410-319-8888. Mark's on the phone from Baltimore. Mark, how are you?
Dr. K, you there?
I'm here. Thanks for calling.
All right. Hey, the message wrote a book called The Fall of America.
Mm-hmm.
And we're experiencing it right now. We're on a sinking ship. And I think we need to revisit what the messenger taught, because in us uniting, the only way we're going to unite is under one God, Allah. And that's the only way that we come together. The messenger, he taught, or he... Martin, before he passed or before he was shot, he went to see the messenger because he was at his wit's end, because he see what we see now. And the messenger told him, they're going to try to kill you because you visited me, because it was, that's why Martin made that speech, the last speech he made in reference to that he had been to the mountaintop, and he looked over, he seen us as a people make it to the promised land.
Right.
So now it's our time to rise. However, we can't make war with this beast. This man, he's sitting back calculating he's been calculating how to take us out for years. So now it's time for us to come together. Because we're the smartest slaves on the planet. We know how to do everything. We don't want to do it for each other.
Okay, now you understand. It's going to be a little difficult when you talk about coming together, which I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. But, folks, just to give the demographics, in America, there are 205 million people who profess to be Christians in America. 3.45 million people profess to be Muslim. And 51 million people profess to be Catholic in this country. So the idea of us all coming together in one belief system is going to be very difficult, particularly when you talk about coming together, which at this point, under the smallest group, I think that's going to be hard to do.
Dr. K.
I'm just saying, I think it's going to be hard. It's going to take a lot.
As it was in the beginning, so shall it be in the end, because we were born into a religion. When we were created, there was no religion. It was just be right.
Right, but see, as it was in the beginning, so it shall be in the end, depending upon your belief system, that's what it was in the beginning. If you are a Christian, you believe that's what it was in the beginning.
If you believe that God was there
in the beginning and created Adam and Eve, that is what you believe.
He created us to be right. So we are the righteous. Those that don't want to be right, they get on the other side of the line.
Okay,
Now,
when you say he created us to be right, I get that. Except that in creating us to be right, Adam and Eve did sin. So from the beginning, it wasn't right. Because they got kicked out of Eden in the beginning. So being right, I think we got to talk about what that means. We can talk religion. That's not the conversation point today. But we can talk about that. Created to be right, there's more. We can have that conversation. And I think when we do, we should have scholars on representing all the different points. Because I can't represent Islam. I don't know that religion. I can't represent Catholicism. I don't know that religion. I represent Christianity. But we can have that conversation. That's just not the conversation we're having at this moment. Little fella's on the phone from Baltimore. Little fella, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K.
Hey.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I was just calling because we're talking about getting together
right.
as black people, but we fail to realize that brown people, red people, all of this, it's all black people. And as long as we're separated fighting our own issues, there's no way that we can get together and fight all of the issues, if you understand what I mean.
I do. I take issue with one thing you said, though. The term red people, I don't know what you mean by that. Are you talking about indigenous people? Because I think I'm a quarter Cherokee, and we know that's in a very offensive term because that was a term set up by European colonists when they started separating people out. Oh, they're black people, brown people, red people, yellow, like all that. Those terms are racist in their origin, but you're talking about indigenous people.
Yeah, I only said that as a term. Again, I myself am indigenous. I'm not black or brown.
Okay.
I was just using that to make the statement.
Okay.
Because as long as we're separated, like during the pipeline crisis, prior to this, we should have come together. During the wall crisis, we should have come together. Now we have the Floyd and so forth. We're not coming together. As long as we're separated, we can't win. Because we're fighting against ourselves before we even get to the real enemy in front of us. And that makes zero sense.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. No, I'm glad you put that out there, folks. So everyone keeps saying we need to come together. I am wondering, though, right? I think I'm wondering whether or not we can actually, quote, come together, unquote. I don't even know what that looks like. I don't even know what that means. Can we come together? Even in the time of slavery, we weren't together. There were black folks who were enslaved who worked at the behest of white plantation owners, and they were snitching. They were in charge of doing all the work around keeping people in line. Coming together, that's a huge ask. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. Maybe we can find some points that we agree upon and work toward that. We have Miss Diane on the phone from line 4. Miss Diane, how are you? Miss Diane, are you with us? Okay, so we don't have Miss Diane. Sean, can you put on Anthony from Columbia, line 1? Anthony, are you with us? Okay, so we need to get the phones worked out. They'll work them out. while they're working out the phones. Justina, can you give me Fred from Baltimore on line two? And for the people that got hung up on, if you can give us a call back, 410-319-8888, I will try to get you on there. Hey, Fred, how are you?
Dr. K, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
You know, have you sent Bella to God Dog Training School yet? You know, if you send her to training school, you can write off on your income tax.
I'm telling you, well, she starts getting trained. Trust me, at 120 pounds, training is what is happening next with my sweet Bella girl.
Oh, that's the truth. I think you try to blame Adam for what Eve did.
Okay, so now, I did not say, I said Adam and Eve sinned.
Adam followed.
Yeah, but that also means Adam sinned. Eve sinned, Adam followed. I'm sorry, you should have said no, but he didn't, so they both sinned. So.
Lord. Dr. K, that's 538 people you say choose them. It's kind of misleading, what you're saying.
Okay, about the Electoral College?
Yes.
Okay, because there are five times that I have proof that the Electoral College chose the presidency against the popular vote.
But the Electoral College chose the president according to the popular vote to the state that they're in.
No, but the
That's how they choose it.
But that wasn't in 1824, 1876, 1888, 2000, and 2016. Where they actually went against. That's the problem that we're talking about, is when the Electoral College does not swing with the popular vote, or when it's so close, you still have states other than Maine and Nebraska where it's a winner-take-all, even if take-all is just by one vote difference. That's what makes it unfair, though, Fred. Fred is gone. Why'd you hang up, Fred? We were just getting started. Dwayne from Columbia, how are you?
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna turn my phone off.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. All right, we're losing everybody. Let's go to Donovan from Baltimore County. Folks, stop hanging up on me. Donovan, how are you?
I'm better than blessed, Dr. K.
Don't hang up on me, Donovan. How you doing?
No, my point is, I think a lot of us should stop drinking that Trump Kool-Aid, depoliticize, and stop smoking that Trump crack. Because I think when things go bad, we shouldn't go with them. You know? That's just my take on it.
But then the thing is, okay, so stop drinking the Trump Kool-Aid. But can we agree, though, Donovan, that the Trump Kool-Aid was around long before Trump? And even when Trump is gone, that Kool-Aid is still going to be there.
It still is. So the object is, when things go bad, we can't go with them. We got to focus on what's working. Like, only thing working in America is money.
Yeah.
And I heard people talk about get together. Only thing work is money here. And I think that's what we got to work on. It's the object is to work on ourselves to get like Trump does.
Okay.
And that's why people voted for him, to see how he did it. But we realize he's a crook. I mean, you can hide it, but to me, he's a crook that robbed the system. So don't smoke that Trump crack and drink the Kool-Aid.
All right. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Mr. Magic's on the phone on line two. Mr. Magic, how are you?
I'm doing good, Dr. K. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
All right, the point I would like to get across, Dr. K, is that for our people, what we must do first, now, I'm not knocking no religion, right? But I will say this. We need to find out the truth, because we know that with Christianity, there's a lot of lies, there's a lot of subliminal messages, there's a lot of negative things that's done on the banner of Christianity. And when you look at things, that Christianity was given to us by the white man or given to us by the Caucasian man. But it was written by a black man, but a black man who was a homosexual and was dealing with Shakespeare. So, you know, like once we get to the basis of doing the knowledge and breaking down Christianity and where it come from, then we'll be have a better set of coming together, because with all this stuff, well, I didn't want to say Christianity itself. I'm going to say all religions, because all religions get their information and their knowledge from the Egyptians or the great Comeditans that were out here back in our early ancestors.
All right. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, folks. So here we are. We are witnessing what is taking place in America. We have to make some decisions about what it is calling us to do. This country is going through a major shift. I mean, I really agree with what Leonard Pitt said. You know, we have kicked this can around race issues down the road long enough. We are out of road at this point, which means we have to reckon with it. In order for us to reckon with it, a couple of things need to happen. And this is where I'll end for today. That before we get to reconciliation, we need restoration, accountability, repentance, and responsibility. Join me tomorrow at 3 p.m. Let's have another conversation that matters. This has been Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Thank you so much for your time.